Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're diving into property disputes, those sticky situations that come up when land is co-owned. You know that saying, good fences make good neighbors? Well, sometimes even the best fences can't stop a property feud.
That's true, and that's where Gilmore v. Gilmore comes in. This case went all the way to the Utah Supreme Court, and it really shows what can happen when co-ownership gets messy and when one owner's use of the property steps on the toes of the other.
Ooh, sounds like a good one. So tell me, what kind of property are we talking about here? A duplex in the suburbs? A timeshare?
Think bigger. A 33,000-acre ranch out in Utah, perfect for grazing cattle. This huge property was inherited by three siblings, Florence Edward and C. Frank Gilmore. That made them what's called tenants in common.
Tenants in common. Okay, I've heard that before, but remind me, what exactly does that mean?
Sure. Basically, it means each sibling gets an undivided interest in the whole property. Imagine a giant cake, right? But instead of frosting and sprinkles, we're talking about grazing rights and profits. And it's different from joint tenancy because there's no right of survivorship. So if one of the siblings dies, their share doesn't automatically go to the other owners. It goes to their heirs.
Gotcha. So were our Gilmore siblings all living the ranch dream together, riding horses, herding cattle in perfect harmony?
Not quite. All three own the land, but Edward was the one who really took charge. He set up a cattle operation on the ranch, and get this, he used the entire property for his own cattle, completely shut Florence out.
Wait a minute, is that even legal? I mean, they all own the land, right? It's not like Edward bought out his siblings or anything.
You've hit on the key question of this case. Edward, as a co-owner, does have a right to use the property, but the issue is whether he went from exclusive use to what's called ouster.
Ouster? Sounds like something straight out of a Shakespeare play.
It does have a kind of dramatic ring to it, doesn't it? But legally speaking, ouster means one co-owner is wrongly preventing the other from using their shared property. And in this case, Florence felt she was being pushed out.
So what did Florence do about it? Did she try to talk to Edward?
You know,
appeal to their sibling bond?
She did. She took a very practical approach. In 1979, Florence sent Edward a letter, a formal letter stating her intention to graze her own livestock on the land. Seems reasonable, right? Considering she's a co-owner.
Totally. It's like she's saying, hey, I own a piece of this land too. I want in.
Exactly. But instead of welcoming her with open arms, Edward basically ignored her request. He claimed more grazing would damage the land and even threatened to get an injunction if Florence brought her cattle onto the property.
Wow, that's harsh. Sounds like Edward wanted the ranch all to himself.
It does seem that way. And that's when Florence decided enough was enough. Appealing to Edward hadn't worked, so she decided to lawyer up.
So she sued him.
Yep. Florence sued Edward. She wanted compensation for being denied her right to use the property. And this is where things get a bit tricky. The case was actually split into two separate trials to figure out the damages. The first trial focused on the period from January 1979 to May 1980, and the second trial covered June 1980 to December 1980.
Hold on, two trials for one property dispute. Why the split?
That's a great question. To understand why we need to look closer at this idea of ouster, earlier I mentioned it's more than just one co-owner using the property all by themselves. So what exactly makes something ouster? The court in this case came up with a clear legal test. Ouster happens when there are actions that exclude someone or are, when one co-owner's use of the property makes it impossible for the other co-owner to also use it. Imagine you and a friend co-own a cabin and your friend changes the locks and won't give you a key. That's a clear case of ouster.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's not just about physically blocking someone, it's about actually preventing them from using and enjoying their own property.
Exactly. So in this case, the courts had to figure out if Edward's actions, even though they weren't as obvious as changing locks, were still enough to be considered ouster. Did Edward's use of the ranch actually stop Florence from using her share of the land? And if so, how much did she lose financially because of that?
So what happened in that first trial? Did the court side with Florence?
They did. The court decided that Edward's actions were, in fact, ouster, and they awarded Florence half the rental value of the land for that time period, which came out to $21,544.91. And here's the interesting part. Edward didn't appeal this decision.
Really? That's surprising. If he was so set on having the ranch all to himself, why wouldn't he challenge that ruling?
Right. It makes you wonder what he was thinking. Maybe he was hoping to work things out with Florence after that first ruling, or maybe he was just waiting for the right moment to make his move. Whatever his reason, that decision would come back into play in a big way during the second trial.
Okay, now I'm really hooked.
Yeah.
Sounds like the second trial is where things really got interesting.
Before we get to all the drama of the second trial, we need to take a closer look at how the court came up with that initial damages amount. Remember those 33,000 acres? Figuring out how much Florence lost wasn't as easy as just dividing the acreage in half. They had to determine how many cattle she could have realistically grazed on her portion of the land. And for that, they used something called animal unit months.
Animal unit months. That's pretty specific.
It is. It shows how even something like a property dispute can involve some complicated calculations. Don't worry, we'll break it all down when we talk about the second trial. Trust me, this animal unit month thing could be important for anyone who finds themselves in a similar co-ownership situation, especially when it comes to grazing land.
All right, let's get back to the Gilmores and that second trial. We left off with this animal unit months thing. What exactly is that, and how did it factor into the court's decision?
Well, think of it this way. You co-own a pasture and someone's hogging it all. How do you figure out what you've lost? That's where animal unit months come in. It's basically a way to measure how much grazing a piece of land can handle, how many animals it can sustain for a certain time.
So like a way to measure the cow food on the ranch.
Exactly. One animal unit month is the amount of food one cow, or the equivalent in other livestock, needs for a whole month. The court used this to figure out how many cows Florence could have grazed on her part of the land during that second period from June to December of 1980. And then they based the rental value on that lost grazing capacity, which ended up being a whopping $29,760.
Wow. That's a lot more than the first trial's award, even though it was for a shorter time. So what did Edward do this time? Did he finally give in and try to make things right with Florence?
Nope, not quite. This time, Edward decided to appeal the ruling. That's how this case ended up in the Utah Supreme Court. He argued that the damages from the second trial were way too high, especially compared to the first one.
Well, didn't he kind of have a point? I mean, the second award was bigger for less time. What was his argument?
He claimed the court got the valuation wrong. But this is where his decision not to appeal that first ruling really came back to bite him. The Utah Supreme Court basically said, "Hey, you didn't challenge how we valued things in the first trial, so we figured you agreed with it. Now you want to argue against it in the second trial." Too late.
Yikes. Talk about a lesson learned. Don't stay silent on something you disagree with. It might come back to haunt you.
Exactly. It just goes to show you have to be strategic every step of the way in legal cases. But the twists and turns don't stop there. Edward had another argument up his sleeve. He had made some improvements to the property during that time, put up some fences, dug some ditches. He said he should get credit for those expenses, even though he lost the ouster part of the case.
So even though he was in the wrong chotch, he still wanted money back for those improvements. Did the court go for that?
Well, they went for part of it. The court recognized that those improvements helped all the owners, not just Edward. So they sent the case back to the trial court and told them to adjust the damages to account for those necessary repairs.
So it wasn't a total victory for Florence then.
Well, she won her case, and she did get compensated for not being able to use her property. But the court's decision to let Edward reduce some of the damages because of those necessary repairs added another layer to this whole thing. It shows how the courts try to be fair to everyone, even when one person is clearly in the wrong.
This whole Gilmore versus Gilmore case is fascinating. It's like a legal thriller. It really shows how important it is to know your rights as a co-owner and to fight for them.
I agree. And beyond all the legal stuff, there's a human side to this too. These were siblings, family with a shared history, and they ended up in this nasty court battle over a piece of land. Makes you wonder how things could have gone differently if they talked to each other better or had a clear agreement from the beginning.
That's a good point. So for anyone listening who might be in a co-ownership situation, what are some takeaways from the Gilmore story that they could apply to their own lives? How can they avoid ending up in a similar mess?
I think there are a few important lessons here. First off, clear communication is key. Remember that letter Florence sent in 1979, formally stating she wanted to use the property? That was super important because it showed that Edward knew she wanted to exercise her rights and he chose to ignore them.
So as we wrap up this whole Gilmore v. Gilmore case, I'm thinking about something. The court really focused on getting Florence her money, you know, making things right financially. But is there anything in the law that deals with the emotional side of these kinds of disputes? I mean, imagine being shut out of your own property by your own sibling. That's got to be rough.
That's a really good point. The law is mostly focused on fixing things with money in property cases, but you can't ignore the emotional impact. Co-ownership often involves families, close friends, people with shared history. And when those relationships fall apart over property, it can be really tough to recover.
Yeah, for sure. It goes way beyond just dollars and cents. You're talking about trust and respect and memories, all that stuff. Hard to fix once it's broken.
Absolutely. And while courts don't usually give money for emotional distress in these types of cases, there is more and more talk about using things like mediation. Mediation is a little less formal, a little less combative, and it gives people a chance to deal with not just the legal stuff, but also the emotional stuff that's going on underneath.
So even if you can't put an exact dollar amount on hurt feelings, mediation might help mend those relationships and come up with a solution that works practically A and D emotionally.
Exactly. It's about finding a solution that goes beyond just dividing the property or figuring out who owes who money. It's about trying to see things from each other's point of view, recognizing how much the dispute has hurt everyone, and hopefully finding a way to move forward in a better way.
That's a really great point. Even in the world of property law, which can be so technical and complicated, it's important to remember that we're dealing with real people with real feelings.
I couldn't agree more. The Gilmore case is a perfect example of how the law works when it comes to ouster, but it's also a reminder that we need to communicate, well, plan ahead, and think about the long-term consequences of our actions, especially when we're dealing with people we care about.
So for everyone listening, if you're dealing with shared ownership, remember, clear boundaries are good for fences, A and D relationships. Don't be afraid to get legal advice. Look into things like mediation, and most importantly, talk openly and honestly with the other owners.
Good advice. And always remember, understanding your rights and being proactive can make a huge difference when it comes to protecting your interests and keeping the peace in any co-ownership situation.
Well, that wraps up our deep dive into Gilmore v. Gilmore. Hope you found it informative and maybe even a little entertaining. Until next time, happy deep diving.